Before we begin our second season, we wanted to take a minute to acknowledge the current political moment. To start, we want to state for the record that we both strongly support Black Lives Matter. We also want to be clear that we both take it to be an uncontroversial fact that we live in a white supremacy. This isn't a controversial term in academia, in particular when it comes to critical race theory. It's used to refer to the way that our world is structured, namely that society is built to favor white people. One reason that people resist the term, I think, is that it sounds like we're saying that society is a compilation of white supremacists, as though secretly in our hearts, we actively wish for the dominance of the white race. And that's a very psychologistic way of looking at things and is just inaccurate. Acknowledging that we live in a white supremacy doesn't have anything to do with everyone secretly actively wishing for the oppression of non-whites. In fact, part of the problem is that to white people, the ease we have compared to other races is invisible to us. We don't even notice it, and it seems normal. And just a quick word about privilege. That's not to say that everyone who's white or a man has it easy or is automatically successful. This is a common misconception. We have positive associations with privilege, where often you'll hear people use it in a sentence like, oh, it's such a privilege to be able to do this thing that we're actively grateful for. And so I think part of what trips people up about privilege is that it's not a thing we're registering, and that's part of the problem. What it means is because of your identity, you have had the fewest impediments. That's just a better way to think about it. And it's hard to register because what you don't see is how many more impediments everyone else has because of their gender or their race or their sexuality or their class or their disability or whatever. To begin to reckon with the fact that we live in a white supremacy, we have to be able to question what we see as normal, to question a lot of what we take for granted. That involves a lot of listening, a lot of reading, a lot of watching YouTube lectures and documentaries. We don't have one or two things to unlearn. We have to reorient our sense of the whole picture. That also means questioning which stories we tell and how we tell them. A lot of what we do on this podcast is about questioning the history of male-dominated stories, which mainly relegate women to secondary characters. In the last episode of our first season, we talked about Spike Lee's 1986 film, She's Gotta Have It, and our discussion included mention of the white gaze, which is just as important to keep in mind. Our Western canon has long been held up as significant in part, so the story goes, because it offers a timeless, universal insight into what being human means. The problem is, most of those stories are about white men, and that becomes a problem when we start to see whiteness and maleness as the essential humanity, because other stories seem less universally relevant. How often have you heard a man say, oh, that's a story about a woman, I wouldn't know how to relate to it? Meanwhile, I've never heard a woman say the same thing about a story featuring a male protagonist. What we need to do is question what we find easily relatable, who seems quote-unquote easily likable, and to stretch our imaginations beyond what we take for granted as universal and essential. Women and people of color need to be able to see themselves represented in narratives as protagonists. But just as importantly, white people need to see more narratives with non-white protagonists, and men need to see narratives about women and non-binary people.
Hi, I'm Lisa McEwen.
And I'm Lisa Anita Wagner. And together, we are...
She's Gotta Have It! Exclamation mark!
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to yet another episode of
She's Gotta Have It!
Exclamation mark. We will probably never say it in sync when we're recording online, because I'm sure there's always a little bit of a delay. Yeah, welcome back. We're talking about season one, episode three of Fleabag. So hopefully you also have watched it, and if not, then hopefully our discussion will make sense to you anyway.
Yay.
Yay.
And yeah, let's start with what we want. Which, once again, I have not thought about whatsoever. I was so pleased to have taken notes.
We're organized, but not that organized. Neither have I thought about this. But I will say, I want to go to my cottage.
Ah.
I do like going to my cottage. I do find it... My life is in the city, and I do find that I am an introvert, but I like to be able to be somewhere where I know I can be alone when I need to be. But I also really like the feeling of being able to access other people very easily.
Mm-hmm.
And in the city, especially where I'm living now, because I'm living in the Annex in downtown Toronto, I can do that, except that it's also a pandemic. So I do find in normal times, when I go up to my cottage, I find that I get frustrated after a few days because there isn't actually like a lot of places to walk very easily in my cottage. And there's like a little bit of outdoorsiness, but actually not as much as you'd think. I mean, in terms of what I'm capable of doing as outdoorsiness and what is available, the overlap is not very large. So between not being able to go out for long walks and not being able to access a lot of people, I get very frustrated and lonely at my cottage very quickly. So I do enjoy it, but I need it in sort of small bursts. So Ontario's bubbling has opened up to 10 people. And so it is now legit for me to go to my cottage with my mother this weekend. I'm pretty sure. I don't know. The rules are very confusing. The Beaverton had a very funny article about this, about how Ontario's rules were moving to mildly confusing to like completely baffling, like in terms of what the directive is. But the point is that it's okay for my mother and I to see each other as long as we're containing that within a sort of restricted bubble of 10 or so people. Although she had a mild freak out that she might have COVID today, as we all regularly do, and so went for a test, and so we might be delaying our trip a bit. But I am now actually, when I realized that I might not be able to go this week, because I wasn't sure if my mother was going to be okay with that, or if she was going to go get a test, I realized how much I wanted to, and nice. And how nice it would feel to have a change of fucking environment right now. Like, I really love my apartment, don't get me wrong. I love lots of things about it. I love my neighborhood, but I just, to do anything that is different would feel amazing right now. I was out for a walk with my friend Susan today, and we ran into a friend of hers, and we were talking to him for about 10 minutes, and I was just, normally I meeting friends of friends kind of in passing when I'm trying to hang out with my friend is not something that I'm very eager to do. Like, I'm not an antisocial person, but when I'm like kind of in a conversation connecting with one person, to have that interrupted for a long period of time, I often find annoying. But I was totally delighted to just be like talking to somebody new today. And he had a mask on and I couldn't see half his face, but I was just like, at one point he was like, I should go to my office now. And I was like, oh no. Because it was just so exciting to me that I was having a conversation in real life with somebody new. Oh my God. And so yeah, the things I miss now because of this pandemic are just, it's really wild. Anyway, so I'm very excited to go up to my cottage, maybe just see my neighbors at a distance and talk to them. And that will be also very exciting.
Nice. Yeah. Well, just as you were talking, I was like, yeah, 2 days actually is a perfect little snippet to just have a different change of scenery. And when you said that, I was like, oh yes, that does seem like perfect. Mm-hmm. And actually, so I was thinking, as I had mentioned to you earlier, I took like a 3 hour, I think it was 3 hours and 15 minute nap this afternoon before us meeting up.
Wow.
And I feel so, I think it has to do with your sleep cycles, but I still feel a little bit like, you know, when you've been sleeping hard, and then I did have an alarm to wake me up to make sure I was awake in time to do our podcast. Mm-hmm. And I still have that little bit of like, I'm not quite awake yet feeling, but it feels good. It feels really like I'm rested. So I guess I want to take that as a real signal and maybe even schedule a nap every day. Because as soon as I just think that, I feel like, yes. So as much as that isn't something I would have thought of, because I do feel like I sleep a lot already in my life, but putting aside some afternoon, either meditation or sleep time every day, I think I want to give that a shot, especially because I am still at an exhaustion point so much. I did try to take my dog to the dog park on my bike, and it was actually just too much for me. We went around still for about 40 minutes, but just closer. And I realized I do want to do some walks or some outdoor stuff, building it in nice and slowly. It's not too much for me. And I think that maybe then that also would be building in more rest, more naps, and a little bit of doing. So that's my new plan, to be able to, in the proper doses, have a little bit more outside time while not crashing. Ta-da!
Nice. Just as an aside, I'm muting myself while you're talking, in part so I can eat my chocolate and not have it make noise.
Excellent, smart.
Yeah, because I need the chocolate right now. Oh my God.
It's funny, I'm actually a little bit off sweets. I know it seems like crazy, but I think it's because I was drinking those Ensures that were so sugary. And now I'm literally like, I was like, if it's salty, give it to me. If it's sweet, I'll eat it later.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway.
Understandable. I think Fleabag. That's all for that. So yeah. Fleabag. Why don't we dive into some initial thoughts? I'm going to pull up my notes here.
Sure. And actually, I'll just start with the very first moment, which is bookended by the very last moment, her jogging. It's interesting because when I watched this one again, just the interesting kind of joyful yet, you know, the Fleabag look on her face as she's running. Because I was like, is she running from a guy? Is she trying to catch a guy? Like, I was trying to figure out at first, like, all the different things it could be. And then she just goes jogging in this way, like, as if he can't even believe it. And I just thought it was such an interesting, fresh note. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not anything I'd sort of seen before. And I was trying to figure out what it was. And then I had forgotten. That's why I watched this. I decided to try to watch them twice to really be able to sort of get at the excellent storytelling. And then the very last moment is also bookended by her again running through the cemetery, which her sister has already told her is very inappropriate to flaunt her aliveness, or however her sister said it.
Which is funny because, you know, we live in Toronto and Mount Pleasant Cemetery is such a place that I used to go biking with my dad. Like, probably because it's like got roadways and there's not a lot of traffic. Like, I don't know if that's a good place to take a kid. It didn't strike me as weird at all when I was a child that we were just like, and you'd see joggers. It doesn't strike me as something that is obviously inappropriate. But of course, her sister is so uptight that it's part of her sister's personality that she would think, like, you're flaunting your aliveness to, like, to dead people? Like, who can't... What do you think the dead people are going to do, Claire? That you're hurting their feelings?
It's really deeply funny, in my opinion. And then fresh. And actually, that goes to just... my next few points were all about that. Really, it's a fresh view and just so funny. And a lot of it, I do believe her sister, the writing for her sister and her sister's acting is just incredible. Like, yes. I actually think that, I mean, Fleabag, it's all about Fleabag, but I think her sister is almost more interesting to me by, like, not that it's about that, but, like, so, such an incredible character.
Or just as interesting, or, like, a kind of interesting contrast, you know? Yeah. And then, like, their relationship becomes another part of who Fleabag is.
And then just right at the beginning, too, a few of the lines, like, they're just too funny for words. Like, remember when she said, I'm farting like mum, door opening or suspicious duck? And it's just like, especially when the sister says it, it's so funny. You see their whole history.
Yeah.
And then especially with that posh British accent that I'm not going to try to even do, but suspicious duck with a posh British accent. And you know, it's about a fart. And then she's like, well, you're getting mom's bum. So it's just like all of their thinking is so truly hilarious. And then with the occasional sibling rivalry, but again, it's so fresh. Like, I've really never seen this particular thing done so well.
And that, I mean, that conversation is also just interesting because their mother is this absent figure, right? Like, they're literally sitting in front of her grave. We learn that she died 3 years ago of, we are, I think, led to infer breast cancer.
Breast cancer,
she had a double mastectomy and then never fully recovered, but wasn't clear what that meant. The way that people talk about their mother in the show is interesting. So we only ever learn things kind of very indirectly. And one of the things that comes out of this conversation is their mother had some sort of very ideal feminine body. Right? That you know, she would kill for her mother's body, but Claire got all her mother's good bits, and it's like, so she's just excited to maybe start to have her mother's ass. Like she, because she thinks of herself as unfeminine or not living up to those standards and in the ways that she thinks Claire does. Even though to me, like, I'm looking at them and they look very similarly built, right?
I was actually literally having that same moment. And I was like, they do look sort of similarly built. And just an aside with Claire, I also love that because, you know, Fleabag does wear like cool looking appropriate makeup sometimes, but Claire wears like no makeup, like barefaced with her poshness. And I just love that because that's what I would do. And you don't see it. And I love that Fleabag also is like, calls her my super perfect power, like perfect sister. So that's not in the picture at all. That's just really an aside, but I really enjoy it. And in this one, when it was even her birthday party, Claire's birthday party, she's dressed to the nines and she's got a totally bare face. You would never see that in Hollywood, I don't think.
Yeah, you're right. And it is interesting the way in which, like, Fleabag is just such a character of too muchness, right? Like, she's constantly kind of like flinging herself out into the universe and kind of like wanting that affirmation. And Claire, on the other hand, is like, it's interesting that Fleabag idolizes her in the way that she does because she's in so many ways so incredibly uptight, absolutely conforming to more traditional ideas of what femininity is, right? Because you're supposed to take up less space, and you're supposed to like have a kind of small body, and you're supposed to be appropriate, and you're supposed to, you know, like, so Claire has internalized a lot of that as part of her personality. Yeah, Fleabag is, you know, the kind of mess who flaunts herself and wears like bright red lipstick. Anyway, I just find that it's like, it's as though it's personifying attention within a lot of women. I find that interesting on a kind of both a kind of character and a symbolic level. That's me theorizing, but yeah, I like it. It's just such a great, they're all just such great characters, every character in this show.
And I had made a note of just one more line, and it's interesting because this is such a simple line that almost says nothing, but when the sister said it, when she was trying to tell her how to like behave at the party, like, don't drink too much, don't do this, don't do that. This party is basically a business meeting. And when she says it, she is so serious and so strict about it. And it's just so funny. And you literally also then see Fleabag almost take that as a dare. But yeah, so it's just really interesting, tight writing. Yeah. And then again, they embody it just so, so much. Just as you were saying too, that how Fleabag is really putting it out, I was just reminded of when she literally, remember when she's trying to find a date for the party, she takes some pictures of her vagina and then just starts sending it. You hear the like, swoosh, 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 swoosh.
Yes, yes.
Like putting out my net. I thought that was an interesting scene too.
Yeah, I mean, and that is quite a personal, intimate thing to do. And then to send it as like a almost, not quite a mass text, but basically that's effectively what she does, right? And then to also have the flashbacks to the boyfriend who like made her send him pics. And then you have the flashback. And what's so funny to me is like, this guy is being aggressive about asking for it. And she's got this look on her face like, oh fuck. Like, like it's not like she's not doing it because she's like, she's excited about it. She's doing it because it's a response to this guy's request. And he says something like, send me one of your favorite bits of your body, which could be anything. And then he's like, your pussy or your tits, please. And she's like, fuck. So she like goes in. It's like, yeah, just the way that we've talked about in the past, the way that like the male gaze really fragments women into pieces, like body pieces, instead of seeing them as like a whole person. Yeah, then the way that she's sort of continuing to do that to her, like herself, and just like the way that, I mean, it's like, it's not like it's a new thing in this show.
But it really is to the nth degree, where it's like, send me your favorite part. And by that, I mean, either these two.
Yes, exactly, exactly. That's yes. Yeah.
And then it goes into, I think his name is Martin, sister's husband.
Yes.
I think he is such excellent casting,
because yes,
just is hitting it on such a perfect mark. He completely like freaks me out and grosses me out almost with everything he does. So it's just a testament to the show and that incredible actor who's also willing to put himself into that place so wholeheartedly.
His name is Brett Gelman.
The
character's name is Martin.
That's what I was pretty sure his name was. But yeah, I've seen him in a few things, often hitting that same note. And I really think I'm so glad that he lives in that place so fully, because it just makes for really excellent, storytelling ability.
Yes. And also what's funny to me though, and I think I've said this to you before, I've maybe said it on this podcast before, is how he's a worse person and in some ways very different, especially since he's sort of disgustingly sexist. But there is a lot of similarities between him and Fleabag, right? Which is just interesting. That the sister chose that, because they've got this sort of antagonistic relationship as siblings. But it's interesting that her sister chose to be with someone so sexually sort of flamboyant and like aggressive and just very inappropriate in lots of ways. Like, this man is inappropriate. And that's part of what, because she was saying like, oh, you know, he makes inappropriate sexual innuendo all the time. And then if you get offended, he's like, oh, I'm just joking. And I think we've maybe talked a bit about this before on the podcast, but like, just joking is absolutely a kind of like very thin veneer people hide behind when they know they're doing something shitty and they don't want to be accountable to it. And it's something that men say to women all the time when women get offended at sexist, misogynistic shit.
It is also interesting. I was just thinking of the moment. Remember when they give the example, because one of, it looks like the sister or Fleabag's friends is going to the bathroom and she said, I'm going to the loo. And then he makes that like wildly inappropriate thing that he's going to follow and fuck her. I was really curious about his wife's reaction, and she literally had like no reaction to it. So I think that's a bold and interesting choice. And then they immediately followed it by, and he, like, no one makes him laugh. Like, no one makes her laugh like him. And you really did see the sister soften with that funny, like, arm gag. And I have had friends and people like that in my life that make you laugh like that. And it is kind of lovely how they can kind of stir it up. But I thought that was really interesting. Mm-hmm. And I guess they're a family of compartmentalizers, really, aren't they? So mm-hmm. now that I'm saying it out loud, it actually kind of makes sense that they would just be like, because I think Fleabag's like, oh my God, but the sister's like, do, 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 do. like yeah. kind of really like was acting like she was mm-hmm. not there. Because that would be so humiliating to have that person attached to you saying stuff like that in the world. And I don't think I had thought that so specifically in the ways that Fleabag is like Martin. I think because I have such a visceral response to Martin, that just hadn't come together. But I do like, not like I like him, but I really like his character and I like that he exists.
It's just, it's very real and grotesque, but in a consistent way and in a very real way and in a very kind of like specific way.
Yeah, very specific. And the way too, it gets so mean so fast between him and Fleabag.
Yes, like he says at one point, sorry to interrupt, but this is important because I wrote it down, something like, he's like, you better hurry up and find somebody because you're just tipping your prime. And the devastated look on her face was
And the
intense.
Way he said tipping your prime too, he like rubbed his fingers together, like
yes.
the creepiest man
yes.
lived in a phone booth his whole life and he's just been yes. watching Fleabag. Yeah, and then both Fleabag and him, again, another sort of similarity, but they both get mean really fast, like in a hair's breadth, it can snap.
Oh, I was just gonna say, there's the other moment between them that's really awful is at the end at the party when he's drunk and he leans in to kiss Fleabag and then she really pulls away and then he gets really mean. After that, I think he says, like, I can't remember. He says something like, oh, fuck you. And he goes back into the party because, you know, like, he's just joked that she'll sleep with anything. And then she doesn't respond to him the way he wants. It really reminded me of, have you seen Pretty Woman?
A long time ago.
So it's about a sex worker who works for this like businessman for a week pretending to be his girlfriend. And at some point, one of his colleagues, played by the guy who plays George Costanza, I can't remember the actor's name. His colleagues finds out that she's a sex worker and he comes onto her. And like, as though because she's a sex worker, she will just respond in this very particular way. And then when she doesn't, he gets really violent. And so it just reminded me of that, like the ways in which it's so easy to denigrate women who are very sexual, but then if they don't, it's just such an interesting dynamic. If they don't respond then in the way that the person denigrating them wants them to, then things like, in other words, like if they don't return some sort of female gaze that reinforces that douche's ego, then it's not always, but it can get very violent.
It's funny, that scene that you talked about with George Costanza, I saw that film when I was a kid, and I actually-
Jason Alexander.
When you said that, that scene actually is indelibly in my mind. So that speaks volumes, because I saw-
Very powerful scene.
Yeah, sometime in the 80s maybe. And weirdly enough, for some reason, I saw it dubbed into German, which is my first language, but I didn't know the name for prostitute in German. And I learned that from watching Pretty Woman in German. Oh. So let's just
What's
decide.
The German word for prostitute?
Eine Nutte. Because I remember I was like, was ist eine Nutte? And then I was like, it's some kind of formalized word for prostitute that I'd never heard in my German child life. Oh. But yeah, that scene was creepy. That was very creepy. And I remember Jason Alexander did a very good creepy job at it.
He did, yeah, yeah.
With that kind of anger. Yeah, I think because Fleabag and Martin, actually really the sister as well, but they really have that anger just below the surface. And I think that's why it can come out like so lethal and so sharp. And that kiss was just so gross. I wrote gross kiss as one of my notes because it literally like, I was like,
she's making the face you're making.
Yeah. Like, she's And I feel like, and remember she said he eats earlier when he was like really close to her eating that sandwich. She said he eats raw sausages. I don't even know or uncooked. I don't even know what that is, but I just, I just got this sense of, you know, that kind of meat eating older man that you don't want to like have been breathing on you. But I got such a visceral feeling from that. And then the interesting complication of how he's not fucking her sister. That's just that weird triangle. Then he's trying to like,
right. Because, and also we don't get a real explanation as to why, because the sister, because Claire says, oh, he still has that thing on his penis, but it's like so vague what that is. Because it doesn't sound like some sort of STI, like, or maybe he has had some sort of herpes outbreak. I actually don't remember, so this isn't really a spoiler, but I think it might be that he's like having like confidence issues when it comes to sex, but he doesn't know how to say that to her. I think that that's what's maybe going on, and we sort of get some allusion to that here in this episode.
That just makes sense from everything about the way he presents himself and everything about his vibe. That seems to make sense. But yeah, it seems like it's not about the like mysterious thing on his penis. It seems more like it's about something else. Fleabag goes and buys her a vibrator, and just that whole triangle of that. And then even when the name of it was a burrower won't stop until you come, and then she goes, that sounds terrible. And then she says, thank you, like so genuinely.
Okay, can we just talk about that scene in the sex shop? Because it was just so highly sexually charged with the clerk who was like flirting big time with her. Meanwhile, she's there with this awkward dude that she insulted and kind of left in the bar previous episode because he didn't want to just go home and have sex with her right away. Who she's also like making jokes with, who doesn't understand her jokes. And he's like, he's just being the most awkward, like, bunny in this sex shop. And yeah, and then she brings it out and she's like, this is the burrower. It won't stop until you come, which is just like aggressive, but like, you know, obviously like titillating for a lot of these characters, including her sister. It's like, it's sort of some insight into Claire because, I mean, Claire is obviously not somebody, you know, like there's people, I feel like you and I are like this. We can kind of like talk more openly about sex with each other, but I have some girlfriends where it's like that sort of does not seem like potential conversational topic, but then sort of surprisingly they're receptive to it, like in a way that sort of they're not comfortable talking about it or bringing it up, but if you do something or say something in that vein they actually really appreciate it because like they really want to be able to talk about it but they can't. Like that's sort of what Claire seems like to me, like somebody who like if you just kind of figure out the way in will kind of open up, but just sort of doesn't know how and doesn't feel confident in doing that and doesn't know how to let herself go.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And that's sort of how I made sense of that, her being like, you know, like this was like a really caring gift that Fleabag got her, even though it's also very characteristically Fleabag in the sense that it's very highly sexual and almost a little bit inappropriate.
Inappropriate, yeah, especially because she does know that they're not having sex, so it is kind of cheeky and inappropriate. She does give it to her outside of the party though, like just lots of different levels and choices in there. And then the last note that I just have, because we don't see a lot of Olivia Colman, but she literally can just have one line, but just that, remember, she didn't like the wine. Like she was like, I'll find a better wine. That's a great first line anywhere. And then when she just, basically the gist of it was she just thinks of Fleabag being lonely in the cafe. And then she just is smiling. And she's like, I just can't stop picturing it with this, like, like daggers in the back with the smile that we've talked about that the British can do so well. But it's incredible because it's literally, and if you just saw that those words on a page without the full context and seeing Olivia's glorious performance, it literally would be a nothing line. But with her delivery and then also her Fleabag even going after her being like, oh my God, yeah, let's go to see chat about things. She found a better wine. So she's kind of antagonizing her. And then that's the culmination, that smiley line that she just can't stop picturing Fleabag's intense loneliness. Mm-hmm. Just another example of that good writing.
So good. It's such a good character.
Yeah. And then actually just back to the date that she brought, who incidentally in the show is called Bus Rodent, I think, which I don't know, that just feels like kind of mean. Like, I understand the sort of what she's getting at, but that was the first thing that I was like, oh, Bus Rodent. I was like, because then she is kind of like using him. You know what I mean? If she really thinks that awfully of him.
Yes, yeah.
So
I think of him as toothy guy.
Yeah. Like I think of him as like, the guy with the teeth. The character of Bus Rodent was so perfect. Remember when he's like, hi, Dad?
Hello. That was like, such a good impression. Oh my God.
It was just so perfect.
Yes.
Just like, it's literally like the most embarrassing point of human contact that you could like come up with. And I really love his character too, and I love that he exists, but I was just a tiny bit, I mean, personally, just like,
of course,
rodent. Anyway.
Yeah, that's not a nice character title.
Yeah. And I do know that, like, you know, because he actually says, remember when she's holding Hillary the guinea pig? Guinea pig. He said, that's a rat, that's a rat, that's a rat. And like, he was acting so negatively with that, with the word rat too. So I realize it's a theme.
And I think that, because she looked very confused when he was upset about it. And I wasn't sure what her confusion was. But now that I know that the character's name is Bus Rodent, it seems...
Oh yeah, that makes kind right? of that.
That she's sort of basically looking at him like he's being a hypocrite, I guess, in that moment. Which, yeah, again, it's like it's a bit troubling because it's just because he looks weird. Like it feels like the series is making fun of him.
Yeah, more than any other. I think that's the feeling I get just a little bit. Oh, and actually just one last, I didn't actually write this down, but I just remembered one last moment that was really interesting. And again, refreshing. You know how often she'll call something and then it happens, which is very funny. This time, remember when she gave her sister the cake and she said, oh, she's not going to eat it. And then immediately her sister started eating it. And she was like, so I liked that too, that she lets herself be wrong about yes. what she thinks she's so right about.
Yes. In fact, I thought that she looked almost disappointed. Like her sister would be like, oh, thanks, and then just put it down and forget about it, and then maybe Fleabag could eat it. Like, I sort of wondered if she was disappointed because she really wanted it, but it was a great moment because it was this moment of just shock. She sort of like swallowed, she looks shocked, and then she sort of swallows the shock, and then they move on. But I like the details in this series of the different emotional reactions because I think, I don't know, it's not, you know, like I'm not an expert in like film or television acting, but I feel like those are not moments that always get paused over, that we don't kind of really get to take that in.
Yeah. And I do feel like the style that she does where she connects with the audience, which I have seen done well, I've never seen someone be wrong in their one-on-one with the audience, I guess. So that's where I feel like it's almost like brave because she allows herself to be wrong in her voice of God, if you know what I mean, like in the voice of God in her own story. But I do agree those kind of minutiae are often glossed over, and that's one of the reasons, one of the many reasons this show is so dense and good. And that is all my notes.
I think those are all my thoughts as well. We really kind of dug into that. I feel it was like a nice meal.
Yeah, we really chewed on all the moments really nicely.
These seriously, each episode of this show feels very like it, like nutritious in that way for your brain. Like it's just so full of humor and character and like thematically interesting and just performed so fucking well.
And actually, even as I'm thinking about it, the bus rodent that did just give me a weird feeling, in a way that is very Fleabag-like to be that honest and kind of cruel. So in a way it still is actually honest. I guess that's just my own kind of, I don't know, ethical judgment being slipped in there, which is actually kind of silly for a show like Fleabag. So
I mean, I guess it just sort of rides a line for me that's ambiguous between like, because that's maybe Fleabag's internal name for him, which makes sense, but then it also becomes literally the cast, like on the cast list. So it's also the series's name for him. And that's why it's sort of walking this dodgy line for me, because it feels like the series is somehow endorsing Fleabag's.
That makes sense. And I guess too, it's the closest where it seems like someone is being mocked purely for something like that, like their looks, like this thing that is not, as rich and human as everything else.
Because he's a very, like, there's, you know, he's an extremely, like, he's a mostly well-intentioned, but, like, extremely awkward guy. And I think to kind of reduce his character, like, the worst version of what he could be said to look like, there's just something a little troubling to me, especially given he is, in a lot of ways, a very kind character. And, like, doesn't objectify her in the way that, you know, the brother-in-law does.
It's true. And even that way that he didn't want to sleep with her right away, that she got so irritated with, that is in the arena of that irritation that George Costanza had in the movie that we were just discussing. It's not the same thing, but it just had that same instant taken personally when something didn't go exactly as originally planned. So so much to think about. Anyway.
Yeah. So we still have the other half of the season one to get through. So it'll be interesting to see how all this setup plays out. Well, thank you listeners for tuning in yet again to another one of our pandemic edition Zoom recorded edition podcast episodes. And please feel free to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or come check out our Facebook page and like it and post something on our wall or send us a message and let us know what it is that you want.
Now that we've said it,
we've got to get it.